Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The new, refined, 7-seat Kia Sorento. Kia's large SUV. Available now at your nearest Kia dealer. And Toolmart, the complete tool center, serving WA for over 40 years. This is Sports Day. Don't change me up. Don't
change a thing for me. Welcome back to Sports Day WA, where the new refined 7-seat Kia Sorento is Kia's large SUV and available now at your nearest Kia dealer. Opinions that inspire. And I'd like to get your opinion about the topic we're about to discuss with our next special guest. Now, the peak body for WA football is the West Australian Footy Commission, and they sent last week a warning to local clubs who are using high-level fitness and strength and conditioning to select out players. Now, we're talking possibly the age group of late primary school, maybe 11-year-olds to about 13, 14-year-olds. And I thought we'd elaborate a bit more on this. Joining us is Troy Kirkham, the Executive Manager of Game Development and Community Football at the WA Football Commission. Thanks for joining us, Troy.
No worries, Pete. Thanks for having us.
Can you give us a bit of a backstory to what transpired last week and the major contents of this correspondence that was sent to all WA junior football clubs?
Yeah, look, we were just starting to pick up a few of the trends that were starting to sort of hearing across the community football landscape, and one of those was some excessive training loads put on the players, and we're just really mindful that making sure that we want as many kids to play footy for as long as possible and in the best environment possible. And although we recognise fitness is a really, really important part of the game, it's not at all cost. The focus has got to be on skill development and making sure we keep these players involved.
So what age groups are we talking about particularly?
Yeah, you sort of nailed it before, Pete, with the age groups that you sort of spoke on, that year 11 and, that 11 and 12-year-olds that are in the market. So that year 7, year 8 age group that we're just really mindful of that. These kids are going through a lot of growth and development in their own body and hitting puberty and the like. And one of the things that we're really mindful of making sure we don't do is we don't burn the kids out and we don't develop these overuse injuries such as stress fractures and osteitis pubis. Because as they're going through the puberty in their teenage years, these are the types of things that overuse injuries sort of come to the forefront.
So did you and your staff witness this happening, or how did you get the feedback to maybe employ what you did last week with the WA footy clubs?
Yeah, look, we heard a bit of feedback from some parents and some stakeholders across the community football network that there might be a few clubs that are potentially, or not even clubs, potentially teams that are just looking to overtrain a little bit at the moment. And they see it as a way of potentially getting an edge against their competitors. But we're just really mindful that the number one goal as a coach of younger players particularly is to retain them in the sport year on year. And that should be your measure of success as a coach. And what we want to make sure we're doing is we're not burning these players out or creating injuries that just don't simply need to be there.
So you're saying that some coaches were trying to maybe weed out those who weren't taking it serious enough for their satisfaction. In other words, they were taking the attitude that we need to get a good team and maybe the result is to win games on the weekend. And there's some players that weren't cutting the mustard in the coach's eyes.
Yeah, look, that's what we'd sort of heard across the network, and yeah, we're nothing confirmed, but we just want to make sure that coaches aren't discriminating kids on a fitness base, and that we're creating opportunities for every kid that wants to play footy to get out there and play footy. We're talking about 11 and 12 year olds that love the game and want to be out there playing with their mates. We know that kids want to have fun and enjoy their footy and play with their friends, and we're just really mindful of making sure that coaches understand that their role is to keep as many kids in the game as possibly can, and that we want to retain them longer term.
Everybody's competitive, and kids are competitive these days, certainly even at that age. Are scores registered at that level when it comes to WA junior football or not?
Yeah, once they get to year 7 and 8, the scores are registered. And then, yeah, I mean, we talk about that. You talk about that everyone's slightly competitive when they get out there, and that's exactly right. Like, we know that footy's a competitive game. But when it comes to making sure that the kids are fit, like, we understand it as a fitness component, but we just want to make sure that overall that we're looking after the well-being and the welfare of our kids that are wanting to play the game.
And what are numbers like at the moment as we head into a brand new season in 2024? I was speaking to actually a nephew of mine who is 16 years of age, and there were some concerns from his point of view whether his junior football club would have enough players to field a team, you know, in 16, 17-year-olds. Is that still the problem he is?
It definitely is. That upper end of youth is certainly the challenge area. One of the things that we're really, really buoyant about at the moment is that we've actually got about an 8% growth in youth registration numbers. So when you look at that sort of upper end, the feedback that we're getting across the board and looking at that registration data that comes through is we're actually up by almost 1,000 participants year to date in terms of that. So that's a really positive sign of what we're doing and some of the strategies we've got in play around youth football. And we're really, really hopeful for the season that we'll see some really good numbers playing. And we know that we're starting to see that from a youth perspective.
What about those people that are saying, in inverted commas, compared to years gone by, we're building a soft generation when it comes to competitive junior sport, in particular Australian rules football?
Yeah, look, I think that's a statement that we hear from time to time, Pete. But when you look at what we're trying to do as a game, is we're trying to create an opportunity to keep as many kids in the game for as long as we possibly can in the best environment we possibly can. We still think that there's an absolute need for a competitive format of the game, and that's what we do have. We still see that kids are getting out there, they're developing skills, they're getting fit, they're competing over the footy. And if you go to any game on the weekend, you'll still see that it's a really competitive game of footy that is overseen and run by these wonderful volunteers that we have out at our clubs.
What about the word that was used saying that because coaches were pretty competitive, and the coaches need to go through a process to actually coach junior football teams firstly, don't they? They need to be ticked off.
Yeah, they do. They've got to go through an accreditation process, which gives them a level one. And then if they want to progress through the coaching pathway, they can get a level two and a level three coaching
certification. So once they got that, some of these coaches went a bit rogue, and people were saying, and parents may have been saying, that they were trying to bully certain players out of the team by this excessive training. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, that's the feedback that we've received. Like, in terms of a coach going rogue, this could just be a coach that's wanting to gain a competitive advantage and didn't know any different. But one of the things that we're really mindful of at the Footy Commission is making sure that we educate, we correct behaviours when they're there, and we're making sure that the environment we're creating for our players coming through is the best it possibly can be.
Has there been any initiatives put into place for this season when it comes to junior football that weren't there last year?
Look, most of them are fairly similar in terms of what we've done. I think at the lower end, we've got a slightly lower number on the field, which when you talk about kids getting touches of the footy, kids kicking goals, kids making decisions on the field, that sort of helps from a decision-making and a skill development perspective. So that's probably the only change. But overall, like I said, we're seeing some really good numbers in Auskick. We're seeing some really good numbers in our youth market as well. So it should be a really good year of junior footy ahead.
What happens, and I'm just throwing a couple of questions to you from that I've heard, if there's a couple of players or one in particular player in a team that is so dominant, is so good. In other words, he's a one-man team, which does happen at junior footy. How do you temper that kid's domination to make sure it's fair for other kids? I've been told that they need to kick with their opposite foot and handball with the opposite hand. Is that correct?
No, that might be a coaching strategy that their own local coach provides to them. But from our point of view, like, we would encourage every kid to learn how to play every different position. Like, you don't, I think at that age group particularly, we're seeing kids that potentially play midfield the whole time, and then when they get to higher levels of football, they're not a midfielder. So we want to make sure that we're developing kids and we're putting the player first and making sure that they're getting a good rounded development in terms of where they play and how they learn to play and the like. So we're not saying that they've got to kick left foot or their opposite foot, but that might be a specific coaching strategy that their local coach uses.
Are they allowed to celebrate a win in front of the opposition team?
After they kick the goal, yeah.
At the end of the game, are they allowed to sing the team song and that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's all part of footy, isn't it? When they get out there and sing the team song and be part of it. So, yeah, so we've got no issues with them singing the team song and enjoying their win and celebrating together as a team. As long as they do it in a respectful way and they're not doing it sort of taunting the opposition, I think that's fine, Pete.
And how's the parent factor developing, because that has been, as we know, an issue for a number of years?
Yeah, look, I think overall, like, being a parent in community sports is a really difficult thing. Like, you're emotionally connected to your kid that's out there playing the game, and you get emotionally connected to the sport itself. And one of the things that's really great about footy and a lot of sports is it's really passionate, and we don't want to lose that passion, but we've got to do it in the right way. And that's one of the things that we're really mindful of, is about making sure we educate our parents and making sure that they cheer and they support and they do all that type of stuff, which is great, and they do a fantastic job in that. We just want to make sure they don't overstep that mark and yell abuse at an umpire or an opposition player when it's not warranted.
Good on you, Troy. Thanks for joining us and explaining it further. Appreciate your time.
No, thanks, Pete. Anytime.
Good on you, Troy. Troy Kirkham, Executive Manager of Game Development and Community Football at WA Football Commission. Give us your thoughts on that too. 0487 736 736. Are we developing a soft underbelly when it comes to Australian rules football at junior level? Or do you agree with the philosophies and the approach taken by the Commission on this matter? Love to hear from you. 0487 736 736. Lise, thanks for your text on that number. Hi, Peter. Great interview with young Luke Edwards, a very well-spoken young man who is very much Eagles' future player. I agree. Happy birthday to Big Dennis Committee. And yes, totally agree. He was the best commentator ever to hit the airways. He had a wicked sense of humour and full of wit. And it was the saddest day for us when Dennis hung up the microphone. And we wish Dennis and the family all the best. Good on you, Lise. Thanks for that. Here's an interesting story, too, that's just surfaced. I noticed it this morning. The AFL has started addressing concerns about a drop in recent seasons of Indigenous footballers playing across the national competition, and have had a look into its multiple talent pathway programs. Now, the AFL's leading Indigenous officer, Tanya Hosh, has called for a special meeting this month with senior management, including AFL Chief Executive Andrew Dillon and also Executive General Manager of Football Laura Kane, because of the drop of Indigenous players in the game. Now, clubs recently returned feedback surveys on recent data reporting a sharp decline in Indigenous AFL players that has caused Hosh and others to look at the recruiting and also to bring in list managers from all the 18 clubs to explain where it's at. It's amazing, is it? The rise in numbers of Indigenous players began in the early 1980s, where a lot of football clubs had the exciting Indigenous players sprinkled through their ranks. But it appears that the First Nations footballers' numbers are starting to go down. In fact, they're down by something like 19% on last year. There's only 72 actually playing AFL football at the moment. Port Adelaide lead the way with 7 Indigenous players on their men's list, and St Kilda, Richmond, West Coast and Gold Coast each have 6. So it's interesting, and we're wondering why
there has been such, in some ways, a fair decline in, and maybe even a sharp decline in the amount of Indigenous footballers playing at the elite level at the moment. As we know, there's such an important facet in many ways in Australian rules football. And it's become a bit of a concern for the AFL. So they've addressed a very important meeting to see where it's at. All right. You can join us anytime, as I said, on the text line 0487 736 736. We're here for Toolmart, the complete tool centre, serving WA for over 45 years, and Nutrien Ag Solutions going further for Australian farmers. This is Sports Day with Peter Vlahos.